I'd like to introduce our speaker, all the way from the LBC, Long Beach, California, Jessica S.
What, no hug? Okay, now you can let go. Now, let go, Brian, let go. Hi, everybody. I'm an enthusiastic member and student of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen, and it is absolutely a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you tonight. My name's Jessica. I want to thank David Kay for inviting me. You know, it's always a privilege when a friend invites you, someone that you know and that has known you for a while, and then they want you to come and speak at their home meeting and run the risk of being tarred and feathered out of their home group. So thank you, David, very much. And Jack, who made me feel welcome. I appreciate that. It's always nice. I drove up from Long Beach with a friend, and we stopped at Panda Express, and I walked in there. I've never been in La Cunada, Flint Ridge, and there was a woman I knew and her friend, and I thought, isn't this amazing? And I certainly don't want to leave out Brian for the comic relief, because, I mean, it took so much pressure off of me to be funny, and I appreciate that. I had a job once as a teller at Bank of America, and they made the mistake of putting me on the walk-up window. So at 9 o'clock, I hit the shade and turned on the mic, and it was on. And that's what you reminded me of, and that was a good deal. Thanks to my friends who made it a point to be here tonight and support me. You know, it does make it easier to look out over a crowd and see faces that love you and know that regardless of what is said here, they're going to love me tomorrow. And that really and truly is a direct result of this program. There's a couple of newbies here tonight from my area. And, you know, what I said was, don't let me scare you off. So if you're new to this meeting, there were four people that identified tonight. I really want to welcome you, and I'm glad that you're here tonight because you heard one of the strongest messages that we hear in Al-Anon on birthday night, and that is that we stay. We stay. We don't go anywhere. Those that stay make it. So I'm glad that you're here tonight, and I hope you'll be here next year for the September birthdays and every year after that. Next year, if this is your first meeting, you'll be taking a cake next year with people surrounding you that love you, and that's just one of the gifts of this fellowship. So, my friend that I rode up with, thank you, Veslia, my friend that came up with me said, are you nervous? I said, no, I'm not really nervous. I'm something, I'm not sure what it is, but I wouldn't say nervous. And then I went on to explain that I'm kind of in this place, you know, this place between alcoholics' birthdays and how to deal with those, where I'm comfortable, and applying principles and other things that I've learned here, and understanding that love cannot exist for long without that dimension of justice. And I'm good with that because I've always been the one to dole out what I believe is justice. So I have to be careful of that one. And then, you know, having my mentors in program kind of deal with things and maybe not deal with them the way, kind of surprise me in the way that they deal with them, which in turn makes me question a little bit what my beliefs are. So I guess you would say, all that being said, that I'm in that wonderful, blissful place of seeking. And that, for me, is where the answers are in this program. Always in the seeking. I've been here for a few years, and I love that I'm still teachable. That certainly was not a word I would have used to describe me before a program because, I mean, I was born knowing absolutely everything. So You know, and then I come into you guys and you start showing me everything that I don't know. So, okay. Wow. I've always wondered all these years, where the hell are all the men in Al-Anon? La Cunada Flint Ridge, who knew? Who knew? What a great deal, what a great deal. And I'm so impressed by all the birthday shares. You know, you're going to be, I love the young women in the program and how that puts them in better stead in relationships and to raise children and to be a daughter and to be a sister and an aunt and a mom and a wife and a friend and all of that. And to have to know now that all of you men are seeking that same thing just gives me so much hope. You make my head swim as far as what my story is tonight, but so much hope, and I'm so glad that you're here. I was born into a family by an alcoholic mother, and she was, and that childhood was exactly like many of us know that it is. Many of us, if you've read that book, Opening Our Hearts, Transforming Our Losses, if you've read how Al-Anon works, it talks about that alcoholic family and how we never know what's up, what's down. One and one was two yesterday, what is it today? You know, I know the rules here, but what are they in an hour? What are they one bourbon later? And for God's sakes, what's it going to be tomorrow? I'm one of three children. My sister is 9 years older than me, and my brother is 14 months older than me. I'm the baby. I'm still the baby of the bunch. And I'm also, and have always been, the smartest one, at least grade-wise. I always brought home the best grades. I was always the best one and the one that you could count on to keep the house clean. I always made the best cup of coffee, and I was always the cutest. All of those things are still true today. And if you ever meet my brother or sister, don't tell them. They think I'm lying, but I'm not. So I became really good at those things because I wanted that alcoholic to love me. I wanted her to notice me. I wanted to feel like I wasn't a mistake. And I kept doing everything, trying to gain that. After all, I was her daughter. I didn't have any say in being in her life, and she had total say in me being there. So come on, could you throw a little love this girl's way? And the more I tried, the more things I did trying to get that acknowledgement and that recognition and a hug. For God's sake, maybe a hug. How about a kiss? Maybe a little I love you. Could you read me a book? Here's a big one. Maybe once in my lifetime, we could sit down and have dinner together when it wasn't Christmas or Thanksgiving. I quit having Easter with her the year she served rabbit. If that's not alcoholic, I don't know what is. And you know, as a kid growing up in that, the more I tried, the harder I tried, the more hurt I became. And I just try harder. It never occurred to me to step back. I just tried harder and harder and harder. And it just never happened. And like many in here, you know, after a while that hurt just becomes so deep that sometimes even without my effort in it, without a decision on my part, it just turned to hate real quick. Because it was safer for me to hate her than try to find her. And so I hated her, and I hated her real bad. There was nothing she could do at that point, you know. Not like she was trying, but there was just nothing she could do. And I know that I would say, you know, I was always the one that would defend my brother. You know, I'd stand before him, and he was more than happy to put me up there in front of him. And at his age today, he's still doing that. But today he's going, wait, where are you, sis? Where'd you go? And I'm like, it's on you, dude. It's totally on you. But I would say to my siblings, why does she always choose the drink? Why doesn't she ever choose to be with us? You know, the first 6 years of our lives, my brother and I stayed with a family in Oregon, and my sister stayed with one of her friends' families in Oregon, miles apart. We didn't see each other but once every few months. Never saw her mom that whole entire time, you know. Well, once in a while, I guess, because my sister did say that we weren't with that one family all the time. There were many families. But the family that I remember was Seventh-day Adventist. And so, you know, they were lovely. They had a lot of kids, and they were really lovely, Paul and Teddy. And Paul would come home from work at night, and he'd put me on his knee because I was the youngest, and he'd read Dagwood and Blondie to all of us kids. You know, me on his lap and the other one sitting on the floor. And when we were bad or, you know, whatever it was, they had this long driveway up in Oregon, and at the street end of that driveway was a willow tree. And we'd have to walk that long driveway and get the greenest willow switch, pick all the leaves off coming back down that driveway, and get ready. And if it wasn't green enough, Teddy sent us back up that driveway. And what I know, and what I really kind of knew then, was that the punishment was the walk. It wasn't, we were never whipped with that. The punishment was the walk. And how lovely that was. You know, my life really changed when my mom moved to Northern California and swung by and picked us up. And how many times in my life I wish she just left us behind. Just left us behind. Because then it really got nasty. You know, I don't know of a sober day in my mom's life. And that includes up until the time that she died. And that's just the way it was. You know, that's just the way it was. My brother joined the military. When we moved to Southern California, my sister was 18. She stayed behind in Northern California to get married and stuff. And, you know, so it was just kind of me seeking this love from this problem drinker and just getting angrier and angrier and kind of coming to my own belief system about stuff and really feeling that self-reliance, that get away from me. I don't need you, you know, because if I need you, you're going to hurt me. And so, you know, that's just kind of the way it went. You know, my story in that household isn't so different from anybody else's, you know. And in fact, in some ways, in Al-Anon, I've learned that there were a lot of blessings in my household that not all of you benefited from. And my heart goes out for that because I know, but for the grace of God could go I. And I'm grateful that in my alcoholic home, some of that stuff didn't happen. So when I was 18, I turned 18 in May. Well, I always get older in May, but this May I turned 18. And on the night before I was 18, I had all my stuff packed because I already had an apartment. I had a car. I had a job. I was still in high school. I was going to graduate in June, but I wasn't waiting. Stroke of midnight, I was out of there. And I moved into my apartment, and I did not look back. And the next month, you know, my brother, 14 months older, but not as bright, told you, we graduated together. And so my mom was at the graduation, and she made it a point to come up to me. She hadn't spoken to me since I moved out. She made it a point to come up to me and make sure that I understood that she was there for my brother, not for me. Well, that's good. Well, that's just good, you know. That's important to me because I have people in this room tonight that traveled, some from my area, some from over in the Culver City area, to be here to support me tonight. That's a pretty big deal in this Al-Anon's life. That's a pretty big deal. So I thank you, you know, those of you that are in my life, I thank you for being here tonight and making that wrong in my life right. You know, loving this person that I thought was so incredibly unlovable, because if my mom didn't love me, why would anybody else? After all, I'm the cutest, I made her coffee. I don't know what you have to do, you know, but... So I set out on this life of mine. You know, now I'm a high school graduate, and I've got a job, I've got a car, and, you know, I'm starting to spread my wings a little bit and started looking for that love. You know, isn't that what we, that's a real common thread in here. We all just want to be loved. Could somebody just love me? Would you just love me? Are you my mom? Are you my mom? You know, could you love me? And somebody that we could feel safe loving back. And I found that it was a real strong suit for me to love you. But I never felt loved in return. So I set out on this quest. And I did all that I knew to do. And, you know, you have to remember that this was late 60s, 70s. We all know what's going on there, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I'm an Al-Anon. I'm not an alcoholic. And I was, and I know that in part because it was the late 60s, early 70s, and I was right in the thick of it. And I was fine, you know, looking for love, living on that free love, you know, and thinking that it was something other than what it was, but oh well, you know, that's not an uncommon story. So I found out when I was 20 that I was pregnant, and it was with the, I was actually in a relationship with this guy. We were actually dating for like a month or something. He was, isn't that dating? Isn't that a relationship? Anyway, he was newly divorced, and he was newly divorced because his wife wanted children, and he did not. So you can imagine how he reacted to my news. Didn't want anything to do with it. And I said, okay, that's fine. And you know, I was really scared because now I was working full-time. I'd gone back to college to get my nursing degree. So I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and now I'm pregnant with all of life's responsibilities. And I can do this. I can do this. And I was doing this, you know? And I'd get really concerned about having this baby and being a single parent. And then I'd get really excited because I'm going to have this baby and be a single parent. And this child is going to love me like none other because I already love this child so much. And after all, I know how not to be a mother. So I ought to be a dang fine mother. I'll just do what she didn't. I had a bike, so my kid didn't. You know that? No. So after my son was born, he was born September 12th, and I went back to school September 15th, and I went back to work September 16th. And those are important dates for me because my son was just days old. And I love this baby with every fiber of my being. And I asked my mom to take care of him. This woman who never drew a sober breath. She was now retired and she was married. I love my stepdad. He was a problem drinker too, but he was funny. He wasn't violent. You know, he was sweet. He wasn't real bright, but he was sweet. And he'd get drunk and you couldn't understand, then he'd just go to bed. Great. You know, and I never quite knew why I did that, but in Al-Anon I discovered that I did that just one more attempt to get her to see me, to love me. Here's my son, the most precious thing in my life. Will you take care of my son during the day? I came into Al-Anon with a lot of shame and guilt behind that. But I also know, I really, really know that that child was loved in that home. And that my stepdad, I don't think my mother really loved this child. Probably because my brother was always a favorite. Now here's another boy, you know. But she never hurt him. She loved him. She cherished him. She taught him. You know, I walked in one day and they're doing the alphabet on the chalkboard when he was just barely a toddler and standing up with her glass of gin there on the counter. I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? You know. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I came into this program years later after I'd had another child. You know, I got married. And the guy that I married was an alcoholic, not so different from other Al-Anon stories. He was an alcoholic, and I married him because he loved me. He thought I was really cute and funny, and he loved me and loved my son, and this is going to be the deal. This is the fairy tale, except he was an alcoholic and emotionally unavailable. Completely emotionally unavailable. And so, you know, we got married, and I said to my sister the night before, this is a big mistake. I need to not do this. You're just nervous. Get out there. Go on. And boy, it was a big mistake. And before I ended that marriage, I was pregnant again with my daughter. And instead of saying, I want a divorce from you, I said, I'm pregnant. Isn't that great? And not so unlike other Al-Anon women, I thought this baby would fix it. You know, so one more time, we went back together. I was in my 9th month of pregnancy, and we went over to some friends for a barbecue. And, you know, my kids are both born in September, so it was summer, and we were getting some sun. You know, that was before we knew how damaging it was. I was, you know, Hawaiian tanning oil and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he got drunk, and they were up in the Laguna Hills, and I said, give me the keys, I'll drive home. And he said, you're not driving. I said, give me the keys, I'll drive home. Justin, get in the back seat. He said, you're not driving. I said, Justin, get out of the car, because we're not getting in this car. My friend said, I'll take you home. I said, good. And he pulled out of that driveway and tore home. My friend got her keys. We got in the car. She took me home right on in his dust. And by the time we got home, there was no evidence of that man in my life other than my belly. That was it. And I was ticked because I had kicked him out. I can't tell you how many times prior to that. And then I'd have trouble paying the rent or whatever, and I'd let him come back. And then I'd get sick of him and throw him out. And now he left? You don't do that to me. That, no, I was furious. And I'm about to have this baby, and now I'm alone. I was counting on you for some babysitting and some help with the rent, and now I'm alone? So I had that baby, my daughter, the same way I had my son. And I didn't quite know what that was until I came into Al-Anon, and I heard you guys talk about that unwanted, unloved, and alone. And that's exactly the way that I felt. And I had this baby girl in that hospital the same way I had my son, alone, surrounded by the nurses and the doctor, wondering, don't you have any family? Well, I sure do. Look at this beautiful baby. Look at this beautiful baby. And my in-laws called me that night, and I told them about their granddaughter, and they said, where's Randy? I said, how the hell would I know, and why would I care? I went off on that. You know, my mom was out of my life at that point. I'd severed that forever because I couldn't stand the crazy phone calls anymore. I couldn't stand the accusations and the name calling and all that stuff. So I wasn't speaking to her. I was working. I wasn't going to school anymore. I'd gotten my license, so I was making a little better money, working Monday, Friday. So, you know, it was working out all right and stuff. But I was just filled with anger. And I'm trying to raise these kids the best I know how. And my tool was to not be her. And the harder I tried not to be her, the more like her I became. And I could see that happening. And I couldn't stop it. Because I didn't know what else to do. She was a yeller and a screamer and an accuser and violently abusive, emotionally abusive, verbally abusive. She was just nasty, you know? And I found myself being just like her, sober, completely sober, and loving these kids, having dinner with these kids every night, telling these kids, I love you, reading to these kids, and acting like her. And that hate that I had for her was turned on to me because I was hurting my kids and I didn't know how to stop. I didn't have any other role models. I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I just did the best I could. And then the next day I'd say, I'm so sorry. I love you. I'm so sorry. I love you. I didn't mean to do that. Mommy doesn't want to hurt you. It's okay. I'm sorry that I scared you. And that's what I did. I scared them. I scared their little spirits. And then I met this man. You know, God was really good to me. I always wanted a sugar daddy, and I got him, and it was perfect. Because he didn't want anything to do with my kids. I didn't want him to have anything to do with my kids. It was just a fun time. So I had this sugar daddy, and then he got distracted for a little bit. My neighbor set me up with this blind date that I went on because just to shut her up. And I went on this blind date, and I'm standing at my window, and this sports car drives up, and I went, okay, 1 point. And this guy gets out, and he's wearing a suit, and I'm thinking, right on, you get 2 points for that. Now I'm up to 3. Takes his jacket off, folds it, puts it in the back of the sports car. I'm thinking, this is awesome, you know? And we'd already figured it out on the phone. He said, so we're good with dinner Friday night? I said, yeah, as long as you pay the sitter. And he said, I don't mind paying the sitter. Well, I can tell you, 37 years later, he's not real happy about it, but he was good at that time, you know? And we went out to dinner, and I said goodbye to the sugar daddy and hello to this man who was different than anybody I'd ever met in my life. You know, he wasn't what I wanted. He wasn't as tall as I wanted. He had the wrong color hair, and he wasn't nearly as good looking as I thought I deserved. But boy, he was more man than all the other men in my life put together. He was self-confident. You know, he had direction. He had a career. He had a goal. And he thought I was pretty special. He absolutely loved me. He loved those kids. He loved everything about it. And here's the amazing thing. I was so in love with him, I couldn't hardly stop smiling. And I knew it. I absolutely knew this was different, you know? For God's sakes, he didn't even kiss me for the first 6 dates. I'm like, what's wrong with you? And my necklines got deeper. I'm like, what's wrong with you? What's it gonna do? What's a girl gotta do? You know? Because I didn't understand the kind of love that he was offering. I'd never known that. All I knew was the other. So we met in May. We were engaged that July, and our 37th anniversary is coming up this month, off that blind date. And I'm so grateful. You know, I'm so grateful. And now, then he brought this little puppy into the house. Now I truly have the fairy tale, you know. I've got this guy with an education, wears a suit to work. The sports car was gone. He had money in the bank when we met. That's gone. But, you know, he was everything. And all I know is that I'd wake up in the morning and I've never been disappointed. Never been disappointed. You know, he stands 6'7" to me. He's as good looking as Hugh Jackman. And I don't even know what color his hair is anymore because it's gone. And we had a pretty good life. And when the bloom came off that rose, this untreated Al-Anon came back full force. And I'm telling you, it was not nice. We sold my mobile home, we bought a house. Now I've really got it going on. You know, I've got a really good job. We've got it all. From the outside, I've got everything. If you're in Al-Anon and you think, if only I had this, if only I had that, if we had a puppy, if we each had a car, if we could afford a family vacation every year, that would make you happy. Let me tell you, that did not make this Al-Anon happy. I raged on. And he would sometimes look at me and just wait for my head to spin around. I could see it in his face. He'd just like, what are you doing? And he'd just stay quiet. And I'd push and I'd push. And he never raised his voice. Wouldn't change if he had a mouthful. And I just get louder and louder. You know, the one grace that I have is that I've never been physically abusive to my kids. I'm so grateful for that. And Al-Anon has made it possible for me to deal with the shame and the guilt that I have over the mistakes that I made in my parenting. I've been able to make all those right. and been able to make all of that right with my husband. And he would stand at the foot of the stairs and say, "Why do you always have to be so self-deprecating?" Oh, there's a good one. You know I love that, hearing that, as well as the one in the morning when I walked over to his desk, the kids getting ready for school with a new box of Cheerios, and said, "Wah, wah, 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 wah." And he put his paper down. He said, "You know what, Jessica? I just can't have this conversation with you until you're rational." Dude, you know, you just don't treat me good enough to get away with that. And I took that open box of Cheerios. I said, "Rational? You want to see rational?" So I took that box of Cheerios, sprinkled it all over him, and what was left I threw down the hall, grabbed my purse, went to work. And in true untreated fashion, I came home from work. There was not a Cheerio to be found anywhere, and that episode has never been mentioned again, except by me at a mic. And isn't that the way our homes go? You know? And that's what he did. You know, he was my enabler of bad behavior at that point. And then I'd kind of settle down. So, you know, we raised these kids and we did the deal. We were home every night, you know, and we kind of had this arrangement. How much time do I have, David? Okay. We had this arrangement, the first one home, start dinner. Sometimes I'd have to sit up at that park across from our house for 45 minutes waiting for him to get home. I'm telling you, it's kind of a standing joke with us because we're both retired now, and he retired 4 years ahead of me, and during that time I'm still working. So, you know, he did the shopping, the laundry, he made dinner, and when I retired 4 years later, he said, "What night do you want to make dinner?" I said, "I think you're doing a fine job." And I, you know, every now and again he goes, "Could just one night this week, could you make dinner?" And I make reservations. And that's with some Al-Anon, you know. I mean, that's me well. That's me well. I just let him do it. So anyway, we're raising these kids, and, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about it because, after all, I'm thinking I've escaped. I'm living beyond this disease, aren't I? Nice home, you know. Haven't spoken to my mother in years, years. Of course, in disowning her, I lost my relationship with my sister, and there was division with my brother, although I'm his protector, so he didn't get too far away, you know. But that was the legacy that my mother left when she died, divide and conquer. And I know that that's a real ism in our alcoholic homes, is to divide. Don't let them get together. Divide them. Don't talk. What do you? Oh, that's not true. And she said, "That's not true. That's not the way it happened." And so, you know, we don't have any cousins, aunts, uncles. My mom was an only child. My dad was an only child. It was just us, and now we're severed. My mom's dead, thank goodness. I mean, I felt such relief. I felt such relief when she died. I just didn't have to look over my shoulder anymore. I didn't have to worry about her showing up at my kids' schools or at my front door anymore. Such relief. I've learned so much from the women in Al-Anon who have lost a mom in program. I don't understand that. I don't understand those emotions. I have no experience in missing that mom. That's the one thing that I have no experience in. But I've lost members in program that felt really dear to me and that I loved with everything. And I know what that is. And that's enough to understand what your pain is when you lose a loved one. You know, I've never lost a cat either, but I've lost dogs. I know what that is. And that's what we offer in here. So anyway, our kids are grown up. Our son went up to UC Santa Cruz to go to college. His sister has stayed behind because she's 4 years younger. And this girl, I'll tell you, she was a liar, a cheat, and a theft at 2 years old. And stubborn as the day is long. I spent hours one night trying to get her to admit that she ate those M&Ms with chocolate all around her mouth, in her teeth, and she'd stand there and denied it for hours. And I said, holy God, we're in big trouble, and I can't let her win this one. I'm in big trouble here. Hours, untreated. Me, untreated. So they grow up, and she didn't change, you know. And then it came out that she started going to raves up in L.A., and she'd say, Mom, there's no drugs there. And I said, okay, that's why we take the can. There's no drugs there. They're full of drugs. And then it came out, you know, my daughter's personality really started changing. She started missing work. She was getting really skinny, and I'm going, what's going on with you? And then she just rage at me. Just rage at me. And I'm like, whoa, girlfriend, step back. And then she'd out and slam. I'm like, what? My husband and I, what's wrong with her? This disease surfaced in her so quickly in our eyes, you know, when we realized it. Within a month, we had gone from my daughter employed at LAX with a good job. Within a month, she is an alcoholic in full-blown disease, addict, eloped, married her everything. You know that guy we're going to die in his arms, and she damn near did. He was her supplier of everything, including abuse. And, you know, when we found all that out, within a month, we said, you know what, Jenny? You can't stay here anymore. Because he was out on parole. He said he was a former gangbanger. You know, he was a convicted felon. All these things that this mom is looking for. You know, that's not what I raised her for. Those aren't the dreams I had for you. But that's the life she was seeking. And we said, you know, you're going to have to do that then. And we changed the locks on the door and put our daughter on the street. And the next night I walked into the rooms of Al-Anon. And I came in shrouded with that gift of despair that we hear about. You know, I came in and my chin was on my chest and the tears and the snot bubbles and the whole thing was going on. And I walked into the room and the big room was being used for something else. So they put us in the kindergarten room and the chairs are this tall. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. And we sat down and they went around and introduced themselves. And my husband would say, hi, I'm Joel. And then he'd give me this elbow, and I just kind of could not get my chin off my chest, could not stop long enough to say my name. And that's pretty amazing for this girl, you know, because I'm one of those that believes that some of us come into Al-Anon needing to learn how to speak up, and some of us come in needing to learn how to shut up. And here I am, absolutely speechless. And so then he'd say, this is my wife, Jessica. And the introductions would go around. And it stayed that way for weeks. Weeks. And we'd walk back to the house across the park, and I'd say, oh, my God, did you hear what happened? What went on in that room? He said, well, I heard the same stories you did. I said, no, no. But did you hear the laughter in that room? Are those people out of their minds? Did they not hear what we just did? And do they think that's funny? And he said, I don't think they think it's funny. I said, I get where the laughter is, okay? I mean, I spent a meeting with you, but I'm far from well. I said, I get what it is. And the thing that really struck me about that was that laughter had been missing from my home for a very, very long time. And I knew in that moment that I was the force that sucked it all out of there. It was me. I was the one that hurt those spirits. I was the one that took the joy right out of that home. Man, that was tough. But I'll tell you, I loved hearing it, and I couldn't wait to get back to you. I went to that meeting every Wednesday night, and my husband would lean over and he'd say, you know, this is a Christian program. I said, no, I don't think it is. He said, yeah, it is. I said, no, it isn't. Look at the literature. The literature says this is a spiritual program. And that was important to me because I came into you without a God, not looking for one and sick of yours real quick because all of you shared about it. And I'm like, good God, do they have anything else to talk about? Just tell me, you know, I didn't need you to tell me if we'd done the right thing or the wrong thing. I wanted to know, how do I survive if my daughter dies out there? Knowing that we've made that decision, What am I going to do if she dies out there? That's all I wanted from you. Give me that answer and I'm out of here. But somewhere deeper in me, I knew there was more there than that. I knew that I had finally found the place I'd been looking for my entire life. I'd finally found the people that I wanted as family. And you sat around the table and we shared something really special in there. And you understood. You understood why my chin wouldn't come off my chest. You understood why I was so devastated. You understood why I hated my mom. You understood. You understood why I got so angry. You understood all of that. And that was amazing. And I wanted more. And I heard in the reading where it said, take what you like and leave the rest. And I was so grateful for that because I took God, whatever it was, and put it over on the table. And then you talked about the sponsorship thing. Are you women? Are you kidding? I don't like women. I don't trust women. My mom, no, I'm not doing it. Put it right over there with God. And this member came over one night and she said, you know, Jessica, it's really okay. Because sooner or later, you're going to want more of this program and you're going to come back and pick those things up. I said, yeah, you just keep coming back. It's good. It's good. And sure enough, I did. I wanted more and I knew that from the first time I met you. I couldn't get enough of you. I didn't know I could go to more than one meeting a week. I thought it was a loyalty thing. And then somebody said, you know, that's a big deal in an alcoholic family. You know, you got to keep your line. And then somebody handed me a directory and said, you know, there's a good meeting on Thursday night. Do I have to quit coming to this one to go to that one? No, same $2 in the basket. Okay, I'm good. What a great deal. If you're new or fairly new, go to as many as you can get to. You're going to be better off that way. So our daughter was out there for a very long time, and our son was up north, and he'd call me and say, Mom, I don't understand how this happened. And he was so upset and angry and hurt and fearful for us. You know, if you're a parent of an alcoholic and there's a sibling, wow, it's really tough on that other sibling because they have their own feelings to go through, and now they're watching their parents go through it too. And I didn't realize that at the time. It was really tough on him, you know. And now that son is qualified as an alcoholic in the rooms of AA as well. And his disease has taken him a whole different direction. And I'm grateful that I've been here as long as I have. Otherwise, I don't know what I'd do. I really thought we were over it. You know, I came into this room not having any idea what was available to me here. And I did pick up that sponsor. I picked up the sponsor before I picked up the God. And I picked her up because she shared at a meeting one night, and she was an abusive mom too, only she was also physically abusive and she threw stuff. I never threw anything. Lower companion, I'm in. I said, you'll work for me because you'll understand my parenting mistakes because I think you're a little worse. And that's attractive. That was attractive to me. I didn't want to be judged, you know. And so she became my sponsor, and I entrusted her with leading me to a God that I could understand. I needed to believe that the literature was correct, that it was a God of my understanding. So I get to set the job description? Yes, you do. It can be anything out? Yes, it can. And I worked for a really long time trying to find a name for this God. And after a while, it became like trying to call my foot a pencil, you know. And so I said, okay, I'll just call it God. Some days it's universe. Some days it's higher power. Some days it's hey you. Some days it's it. And it really doesn't matter because I know that my higher power knows my heart and knows that my belief and my faith is in the higher power that's available to us in these rooms. And I know that there's as many higher powers in this program as there are members, and thank God. If there were only one God, how many of us would be left outside these doors? If everybody had to believe in my God, how many people would be left out of that? Because he's kind of weird. You know, some days it's a he, some days it's a she, who knows? It just doesn't matter to me anymore. What I know is that there's a force in my life that works when I turn to that force. There is nothing beyond what my God can take care of, nothing. So after several years, our daughter came home and we put her right into a shelter and she found AA. Oh, man. I couldn't believe she got out of that alive. And I knew that God was in that. I wasn't real certain of my God at that point yet, but I knew that God was in that because she came home. She called me from the garage on a Friday and said, "Mom, can I go in the house through the dog door?" I called my husband. He went home, and she couldn't get in the shelter until Monday morning. And so we kind of hit her and juggled her all weekend because this guy is a textbook abuser. I knew he'd come looking for her, and I knew he had weapons. And we just hit her all over. And Monday morning, it was just like in the movies, you know, meet us at the Shell station. Okay, what's your name? Don't worry about our name. We'll find you. There's not too many people in the parking lot with an alcoholic in the back seat detoxing.
Okay.
And sure enough, that's exactly the way it worked. And this young lady from the shelter walked up and she said, "You must be Jenny." And my daughter, "Yes, I am." You know, and she said, "How do you do? My name's Jessica." Two of them standing here, and off they went with our daughter. That night, my husband and I went to bed, and the phone rang at 1 o'clock in the morning. "Where's Jenny?" I said, "What do you mean, where's Jenny? Where's Jenny?" I said, "You tell me. You're the one that took her from our house. You tell me where my daughter is." And I hung up on him. I said, "Oh my God, thank you. Thank you." Because I don't know if she could have said no. I don't know that she could have said no. So, you know, we set out with her in recovery, and I thought, life is perfect. I've got Al-Anon, now she's found AA, she got rid of this guy, you know, we're good. And I made the mistake of thinking that sober meant sobriety. That going to the meetings and being sober meant that things were good. And there was a point where he had to go to jail, and she came back. And I can tell you that girl was going to meetings, but she was a long way from sobriety. Long way. And she went back with him. And Al-Anon was working, because when she went back to him that very weekend, I went to Idaho to a friend's wedding. And I said, "You know, Jenny, the thing is the same. When you want to make better choices, you can come back, honey. I love you. I love you so much. And I want better for you." I don't know. You know, today she's not, you know, it's been a number of years. She's not in meetings today. She's dry today. She's, you know, about a year and a half off a relapse. She's got two kids. She's given me grandchildren. Our son's also given me grandchildren. He's divorced. They both went through that period of hating me because I have program. And what I know today is that they hate what they feel that they can't do. But I just stay with you because I know I'm the best chance they have. And those grandkids, they're so much better off than I ever was because they have me. I've stayed in Al-Anon, and I have the great privilege of working with others and going to meetings. And I'll just tell you this. And then I'll close up on this because I know I'm out of time. But Al-Anon has absolutely changed my life. And it is changing the life of my kids, whether they want to believe it or not. And it is changing the life and the direction of my grandchildren. I don't know if they'll be alcoholics or not, but they're going to have a whole lot of knowledge when they do. And they're going to have a grandma that's going to be able to talk to them. I'm not afraid of this disease today. And I had a friend that I talked to and said, "I don't know why my husband ever stayed." She said, "I do." I said, "You do?" She said, "Oh, yeah. Your husband stayed because he was able to see that spot in you that is so incredibly deep. It was literally untouched by this family disease of alcoholism. That's what he saw in you. He saw that potential, and I was overwhelmed at that wisdom." And what I know is that Al-Anon saw that place too, and you used that as a foundation to build this program. I learned this program real slow. And what I know is that it's rooted really deep in me. I love this program. And when anybody says, "Are you a black belt Al-Anon?" You bet I am. Because it has provided me a life that I never thought I deserved. You know, those amends have been made. That forgiveness has been experienced for me. That alcoholic I hated, I don't hate her anymore. And God did that for me. I sit in the rooms of Al-Anon today, a member in good standing. with a God that I know loves me and a God that I turn to. I try to be aware and practice these steps and principles and live these things in my life on a daily basis. And some days I'm good and some days I'm not. But what I know is I'm welcome in these rooms on my very worst days and on my very best. And you are too. And I thank you for having me here tonight.